It's 20 minutes to go till 5 on a Friday downtown program. It's that time. Every Friday, we get together with our friend Jesse Connolly of AlongTheBoards.com and talk a little hockey. Time to do it right now on the Tiller and Rye telephone line. Jesse, good Friday afternoon.
Howdy, right back at you.
Well, been great games, great series so far. Both the Eastern Western Conference Finals, and even without the Bruins there, but it's been pretty compelling hockey.
Absolutely, you never know what you're going to get, and there's always talk about the playoffs suffering from a lack of offense, and we certainly haven't seen that in the Eastern Conference side of things. 6-5 score the other night. You got the Lightning putting up 6 goals in back-to-back games, and then you know out west, it's been a really good physical battle. The Ducks are kind of imposing their will and wearing down Chicago, and that's what playoff hockey is all about. So you know, so far you have to be very entertained by how both series have played out in the first 3 games.
Yeah, that Tampa Bay Rangers game the other night was great. Can those guys have anything left for the next go around?
Oh, I know. It's hard to imagine that you can't be worn down after scoring 11 goals, even if it's not one of those, you know, grinded out overtime, double overtime, triple overtime games. You know, they wrap things up, I think, about 8 minutes into overtime the other night. It definitely takes its toll on you. We've seen both teams utilizing their speed tremendously, and you do that for 68 minutes. It's like I said, it's going to take its toll. So we'll see if that has any effect on Game 4, if guys are dragging their feet a little bit early on in the first period.
Over in that Western Conference Final, too, it was such an emotional win for Chicago in Game 2, the longest game in the team's history. And then they seem to be lacking a little steam in their go-around with Anaheim in Game 3.
Yeah, we talked last week about, you know, the Western Conference Final Series being a battle between a team that's built on speed and skill like Chicago and, you know, a team that really plays tough and plays physical like the Ducks. And so far, obviously, the Ducks have the edge with, you know, the 2-1 series lead, but they've been playing, they've been imposing their will. They've been playing their brand of hockey. They've got, you know, so many tough forwards, you know, over there. You're not even the big guys like Getzlaf, but the secondary players, the Bileskis, the Maroons, Coglianos, that wear you down, that drive to the net, that they hit you every chance they get, and it's adding up. You know, when you see a team like Chicago that has really had to rely on, you know, more than ever, their top pairing, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook. You play a game that, you know, extends nearly the length of 2 games, triple overtime there. There's going to be some residual effects, and we saw that in Game 3 there, where they were just a little bit worn out, and the Ducks got the best of them. And we saw Anaheim, they took the 2-1 lead late, and they just got to sit on it in the third period. They played stifling defense, and Chicago really didn't get a lot of good chances, maybe because they were a little out of energy there.
They say even the losers get lucky sometimes, and with all of the teams that were coveting his services, what made Mike Babcock's choice the right choice for him?
Toronto, yeah. I mean, you obviously look at it as a huge challenge, and you know, when you succeed at a huge challenge, it's obviously a very rewarding experience. And I think that's first and foremost what Mike Babcock looks at. The Toronto Maple Leafs, Toronto is considered the mecca of hockey, so that's kind of like taking over, you know, behind the bench for the Yankees there. That's a big deal. There's a lot of clout in that job. And obviously he's a proud Canadian. He's had some success obviously in the Olympics with, you know, behind the bench for Team Canada. And I think it's a homecoming of sorts. And it's taking on a storied franchise and trying to turn things around there.
Now the Bruins finally got their man. It's the guy we thought it would be all along in Don Sweeney. What does that mean for the head coach?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've long suspected that Sweeney would be the guy. We're waiting and waiting for Boston to get a chance to talk to Jeff Gordon, but that didn't pan out. A couple other candidates that came in to interview just didn't pan out. So they go with Sweeney. They go with the guy that they know who's been with the organization for somewhere near a decade now. He's been an assistant GM with the team for 5 or 6 years now. And, you know, with Sweeney, obviously his first task is to decide Julian's fate. And we obviously heard him touch on that the other day when he was introduced. And he's going to talk to Claude and talk about philosophies and, you know, some changes that he thinks the team needs to make. And, you know, changes that we've all talked about for a little while now since the Bruins got eliminated. So, you know, what does it mean? I'd like to think that, you know, there's still a chance they go in a different direction. But I think the safe move is keeping Julian around. If you're Sweeney, obviously you know that Cam Neely is above you, and he's not too high on Claude Julien from, you know, various reports or talks about Cam wanting Claude out back in January. So I think you keep Julien around. You hope that he's obviously receptive to your ideas, and I think he will be. I think he has to be. You know, he wants to keep his job. you see how things play out in October and November, and then you go from there. And if, you know, if it doesn't pan out, you know, and you're in Sweeney's shoes, you've got a fall guy. You can, you know, you can pin things on Julian, and you can open up the job, and, you know, maybe put an interim in there, maybe have someone else lined up, and you go in a different direction. So I think Julian will be here come October, but the leash will be short.
Jesse Connolly of AlongTheBoards.com with us here on Downtown. If you look at the situation, Jesse, with the Bruins, is their biggest problem style of play or personnel?
I think it's a mix of both. I think we saw them build an identity, or, you know, perhaps, you know, recapture an identity early on in the Julian era, with you know, the big bad Bruins, and playing with toughness and outworking teams, and that worked right from the get go. You know, in 2007-08, they really weren't a very talented team, and they made the playoffs on that. And I thought that, you know, that kind of continued to build toward, you know, the 2011 season, and then we've seen it kind of go away. They haven't been outworking teams. They've kind of played like they were entitled, like they were guaranteed a playoff spot. And, you know, at the same time, there are personnel issues too. We've seen you know, some changes here. One that Don Sweeney touched on without, you know, calling out his name directly, Tyler Seguin, having some patience with NHL development and not giving up on guys so quickly. And obviously we've seen what he's turned into down in Dallas, and that's someone the Bruins badly could have used this past year, you know, a point per game player, and, you know, someone that can, you know, change the game and have an impact every night when he's on, when he's, you know, when he's reached his prime. And, you know, you look up and down the roster, there's some changes that need to be made. They're going to need to find a backup goalie. Obviously, Nicholas Svedberg was so-so this season. Now he's in the KHL. They've got to determine Dougie Hamilton's fate. He's going to be a restricted free agent July 1st. And then, yeah, I mean, I think overall they could use some improvements. Obviously the fourth line is going to need to be remade with Greg Campbell and Dan Pyatt going. Is Riley Smith the guy you stick with for the remainder of his 2-year deal? There's a lot of questions up front in the personnel department, but, you know, I think first things first, they have to decide what kind of team they want to be, and they have to determine what their identity is going to be first.
Does the Sweeney hire strike you as very Bruins? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's funny. I saw a report that there were mixed feelings among the decision makers between, you know, Harry Sinden, Jeremy Jacobs, Charlie Jacobs, Cam Neely, so on and so forth, about whether Sweeney was the guy or maybe they, you know, they went with somebody else. So is it a Bruins move? Yeah, I mean, they tend to bring back familiar faces, obviously. You know, Neely was brought in to be the president to kind of, as kind of a fan service move to, you know, to show that they were going back to being the big bad Bruins. I mean, to their credit, you know, they followed through on that for a while. And, you know, we saw Sweeney get brought back into the organization, Jay Pandolfo. I mean, there were plenty of names over the years. So I think, yeah, I mean, over their time span, over their, you know, nearly 100-year history, the Bruins do have a penchant for bringing in familiar faces. But you could say that about a lot of organizations, too.
All right, so Jesse, I was able to track down a DeLorean. We're working on getting the sufficient gigawatts here. If we could go back in time through the Chiarelli era, you mentioned Seguin. Is he the guy? Is there one guy that if you could, you'd bring back that would give the Bruins' future a bit more hope?
Yeah, I think there are, you know, certainly some other names you could throw out there. The Johnny Boychuk trade just really dampened the mood heading into this past season, and I thought kind of set the tone. There have been different moves along the way, you know, some poor draft picks, so on and so forth. But the biggest move of all, you've got an MVP candidate down there in Dallas that, you know, you could have leading your franchise for the foreseeable future. I think you have to look at Tyler Seguin. And obviously there are, you know, extenuating circumstances. There are supposed off-ice issues with him, you know, being, you know, an alleged party boy. And obviously we saw some factual stuff surface, but, you know, you just have to wonder why did the Bruins have such a lack of patience? Obviously, the playoff run there, I think he had one goal in 23 games, if I remember right. He was downright terrible. But they just gave up on him. And you have to wonder, like I was going to say, you know, what's with the leadership issues there in Boston, whether it's a front office or, you know, guys that are in the locker room. How come Tyler Seguin couldn't be fostered and couldn't be, you know, molded into a mature adult, and, you know, mature NHLer, and, you know, when he was here? So I think, yeah, that's definitely Chiarelli's biggest regret.
That's a great point, and the leadership piece especially, because down the stretch in the regular season, it was clear that there was a lack of on-ice leadership with this team.
Yeah, you look at how the way the last few months played out, and even those last few weeks, it was crunch time for the Bruins pretty early on. They dug themselves a hole in the first half of the season, and they were a team that, you know, had to be playing desperate hockey from the point, you know, they got back from the All-Star break on, and it just came in and stops and starts. It was really frustrating to watch, you know, as a writer and as a fan to wonder, you know, what's the deal here? You see teams like the Blue Jackets. playing their hearts out when they had absolutely nothing going for them. You see teams like the Senators going on a crazy run and just battling every night, and the Bruins, a team that was built on battling, that has plenty of skill, just had nothing on so many nights. And there were so many times where you couldn't help but question what was going on in the locker room and on the ice and on the bench with the leadership. It was very perplexing how it played out. If you want to pin it on the players or perhaps the coach and management as well.
It has to be the coach, though, doesn't it? I mean, 2 years ago, Claude would have cut through that noise, don't you think?
Yeah, it's always a "what have you done for me lately" league, and
right.
And we've seen this happen to the Bruins in the past. They didn't really pay for it, I guess you could say. Like the President's Trophy winning season, I thought there were stretches where they kind of played like they did in the second half of this past year, where not to say they were mailing it in for weeks on end, but there were games where they didn't play up to their capabilities, and there are a few too many of them. And then we saw this past season. You have to wonder, is the message lost? Has Claude Julien, to use the beating the death cliche, has he lost the room? If your job is to coach the players and to guide the players and to lead on the strategy front, there's only so much you can do with that. But motivation, where was that? I really wondered that so many times throughout the season. How could someone in Julien's position, who has this track record, who should have all the power in the world, given what he's accomplished with this team and the relationship he's built with all the players, how come you couldn't get them motivated on so many nights on such a regular basis?
Jesse Connolly writes about the Bruins and the NHL on alongtheboards.com. Jesse, great fun as always. Thanks. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll check in next Friday.
Thanks so much, Rich.
It is, 10 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Get